This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne. 100 years ago this month, President Theodore Roosevelt established the U.S. Forest Service. Through a century of natural and social change, the Forest Service has managed more than 1 billion acres of land, from the cypress swamps of the Deep South to the rainforests of the Pacific Northwest. Trying to balance economic and recreational uses of the national forest has dominated its history, but scientific research has become an increasingly important part of the agency's mission. In the first of 2 National Geographic radio expeditions, Elizabeth Arnold takes a rather different look at the forest.
Every day, Mark Creighton climbs 25 stories to go to work. There aren't any stairs, just a metal ladder.
Okay.
That's 300 rungs.
And then when you're going up and down, you're probably going, now, is this number 10? Is this number 11?
It doesn't matter till you get right here. So, yeah, it doesn't bother me any.
Creighton's job site is the tiny operator's cab of a construction crane. His perch is high above the treetops of Gifford Pinchot National Forest, one of the first national forests named after the agency's first director. It's an oasis of 500-year-old trees in southwest Washington state.
For a tower crane operation? Sweet.
Yeah.
Beats the heck out of being in the city.
Creighton's unlikely employer is the U.S. Forest Service. While the agency's perhaps best known for a century of putting out forest fires, few realize it's also been at the cutting edge of scientific research. At the controls of this 285-foot crane that swings in a circle the length of a football field, Creighton enables scientists in a suspended cage to get a bird's-eye view of the trees, scientists studying everything from caterpillars to climate change. Research here in the Gifford Pinchot National Forest began in 1902 when a 5-acre plot was cleared for a nursery to raise seedlings to reforest the big burns of the time. That plot grew to 180 acres. Research over the next 8 decades focused on growth, yield, and mortality of Douglas fir for the agency's tree plantations. By the 70s, the focus broadened to the last remaining old-growth forests in the area. And in 1995, the Forest Service joined with the University of Washington to erect the canopy crane as a tool to study the tops of these old trees, some of the tallest in the world. Along with scientist David Shaw of the university and Rick Meinzer of the agency's Pacific Northwest Research Station, we strap on harnesses and clip into a small metal cage, the gondola.
Are you in?
Yeah,
let me do a quick check.
Can you tighten those just a little?
Yes.
Yeah.
When it's aloft, the gondola will swing in a 550-foot circle, giving researchers access to nearly 6 acres of old-growth trees from the bottom to the top.
Okay, Mark, we're ready to go up on the load.
It's at the tops of the trees, the canopy, where most of the budding, branching, and photosynthesis occurs. And to get the complete picture, that's where scientists need to study tree physiology and growth, how trees absorb carbon dioxide, use water, and their relationships with lichen, fungi, birds, and insects. David Shaw has worked here from the beginning.
So now we're lifting off the forest floor, and we're going to move up through a vertical 200-foot canopy. And one of the major things that we have come to understand about canopies is they're vertical. You have different organisms at different levels.
We rise gracefully, almost soundlessly, up and through towering Douglas fir, western hemlock, and red cedar. The smell is thick and sweet, and the height is dizzying.
Wow. This is amazing. I mean, this is just... I do feel like a bird, you know. It's very different than a plane or anything like
it's
that.
It's very different,
because you're still kind of in the trees, but you're right at the treetops.
This is a grand fir here. We're right at the top of a 180-foot tall grand fir.
This right here?
Right.
You could reach out and touch the tops of any of these giant trees, and the scientists here do to gather samples and conduct experiments.
Now we're going to drop down this crown of this grand fir, and you can observe how the foliage changes from the upper sun foliage down here into the shade.
As we glide lower, the short, fat, upward-pointing needles become long and thin to maximize the limited light.
I saw a little whirligig kind of a thing over in one of these trees. I wonder what that is.
Yeah, there's several devices that you can see. The white structure you see over on that, strapped to the tree bark there, is a respiration monitoring device. It measures the amount of carbon dioxide.
More than a dozen projects here are focused on climate change. And just as doctors can't diagnose human health by looking at the lower two-thirds of a patient, researchers need to examine the entire tree, especially when it comes to understanding the carbon cycle. Up here in the brightly lit treetops, where most of the photosynthesis occurs, scientists are looking at the amount of carbon being absorbed and released. When carbon's released, it joins carbon dioxide from tailpipes and power plants and warms the atmosphere. But Rick Meinzer says research here shows these older forests actually are storing, rather than emitting, huge amounts of carbon.
It had been thought previously that old-growth forests are probably carbon sources. That is, that over the course of a year, the net amount of carbon will be toward the atmosphere. That is, the forest will be releasing carbon because of respiration. But the several years of measurements that have gone on here have shown that over the long haul, the forest seems to be a carbon sink. That is, it's still accumulating and storing carbon most of the time.
For a century, the Forest Service has focused primarily on its forests for their net value as timber and for public recreation. In the future, research here points to yet another value, the role these old trees may play in climate change. Meinzer says it's a noteworthy shift from looking at the forest as a commodity to its role in the ecosystem.
Yeah, I think we've moved from largely sort of observational measurements of how the forest behaves, you know, how fast a tree diameter or height increases, to more of an understanding of all the processes that control that. And if you're going to manage forests in the long term or understand what's happening to a forest, say, as climate changes, you need to understand all these processes.
The research crane here in Gifford Pinchot National Forest is the only one of its kind in North America and the largest of just 11 in the world.
So we do consider this a very unique research opportunity and research facility that has provided us with a rare opportunity to get up and study, you know, forests in their three dimensions with such an amazing tool. It's the skyhook everybody always wished they could have.
It's doubtful Gifford Pinchot, who convinced President Roosevelt to establish the Forest Service, envisioned a towering construction crane in a quiet forest that bears his name. But Pinchot's remembered not only for wanting to set aside vast tracts of trees, but for wanting the fledgling agency to become a leader in understanding their value.
About 3 meters. Easy.
That was really cool.
For Radio Expeditions, I'm Elizabeth Arnold.
Tomorrow, join Radio Expeditions for another perspective beneath the forest floor. Radio Expeditions is a co-production of NPR and the National Geographic Society. Photos from the Wind River Canopy Crane are at npr.org.